Hello and welcome to another episode of On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. This is another one of our special podcast interviews, or spy shows, if you will. I'm one of your hosts, Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, and joining me for this episode is my good friend, I boxed you in again there, and co-host, Alan J. Porter.
Best friends are good.
Downgraded all the best. It's Alan J. Porter. What do we got in our Eyes Only dossier for today, Alan?
Today's a very special show for me today. As regular listeners to the network know, Bond Comics is my thing, and today we're talking to Clinton Rawls, who is doing an amazing project that will be a benefit to Bond fans who don't speak any language other than English. So, Clinton, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us briefly about Comic Royale?
Well, hi, everyone, and thank you, Jared and Alan, for having me. I'm very happy to be here. The gist of it is I manage a website called comicsroyale.com, where I create English language translations of rare, sometimes unofficial or even illegal, James Bond comic books, so we can all read them for our own enjoyment.
That's good stuff right there. Now, I love comics, just like Alan. And I love James Bond, just like Alan. And I love James Bond plus comics, just like Alan. You're out there just doing the good stuff, doing the good deeds.
Well, thank you. No, I also love comics, too. I grew up with comics. I think I got a lot of my morality from comics when I was a kid. You know, the idea of doing the right thing. You know, I read so much Spider-Man when I was a kid. Spider-Man and Batman and Superman. And I got older. I branched out into a lot of the other things. But I think I really learned a lot of my morality from comics.
Yeah, I got all my morality. I read a lot of Dr. Doom comics. I read a lot of Lex Luthor comics.
No one rivals Jared. No one.
No one. Well, Clinton, that sounds really, really awesome. And we've got some questions for you about your very worthwhile project. First of all, I want to say thanks for doing that. You're a service to the entire Bond community.
So. No, you know, it really is a labor of love. And thank you very much.
Hey, no problem. But you know what you got to do? You got to go through the Bond basic questions. Every guest who comes on for an interview does the Bond basics. And I'm going to have my very best friend in the whole world, Alan, kick that off.
How many more times can you do a riff on that by the end of the show?
You're going to find out.
Yeah, unfortunately we are, aren't we? Okay. So, Clint, how did you sort of get drawn into the universe of James Bond? What was your first encounter with 007 that you remember?
I like to joke with people and say it was destined to happen because I was born in 1983. And of course, you know, that's where we had Never Say Never Again, Octopussy, and even the Return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. So we had three James Bond movies in 1 year. So I kind of like to say it was destined to happen. It was in the stars for me. My first experience with Bond was I was just shy of 12 years old in 95. When my mom dropped my brother and I off to see GoldenEye. She had zero interest, still has zero interest, so she wasn't going to sit there and watch it with us. She was getting her hair done or something. But I just loved the movie. It was my first Bond film. I'd never seen any of them before that. You know, of course, you grow up knowing Bond. It's a pop culture phenomenon, you know, so you know the name and you know the number, as they said. I just loved that movie. That movie sucked me in, and I was a Bond fan for the rest of my life ever since then. It's funny when you look back, there's so much of that movie must have gone over my head. I didn't know what the Cold War was when I was a kid back then. All that sexual harassment, stuff like that was over my head. I didn't even get the importance of M being a woman. But I started thinking, well, why is it Bond works for kids and adults? And I remember that movie in particular. You know, it's really about betrayal. And every kid understands betrayal. It's about righting wrongs from the past, making up for your mistakes. Bond in that movie, he really is kind of this somewhat childish, anachronistic smartass who thinks he knows everything. But as far as we can tell, he does know everything, so it's okay. And he does whatever he wants, and he's so good that even his parental figures, they have no choice but to respect him, even though they want to scold him. So I think as a kid, that's how all kids see themselves. So really, I think that's why Bond is perfect for any age.
Wow. Yeah. GoldenEye. So good.
Yeah, it is. And there's a lot of worse movies to draw you in than that one. Yeah, if you're going to start with Bond, that is in my top five.
Yeah.
That's one of my all-time favorites and a great one. And that was an interesting analysis there of why it appeals to kids, because I was a lot older.
Well, I am an overthinker. I work in academia, so I'm always overthinking everything. When my students say, I like this painting, I'll say, why? I don't know. It's pretty. Why is it pretty? I just go on and on with the Socratic reasoning. I probably annoy a lot of them when I do that, but that's how I am. I just overthink everything. So that's my current analysis for GoldenEye, why it appealed to me as a kid.
But then again, you just mentioned about the fact that, you know, it's about getting betrayed by your best friend. So by the end of this podcast, Jared and I, yeah.
I've got maybe Sean Bean-like qualities.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since Alan, you are from England, right? So that means you're going to have to be the good guy because Jared's going to have to say,
I knew I was the villain.
Say for England. Yeah.
Yeah, we all knew I was the villain going into this. I'm going to put a guess out there, but I'm happy to be wrong. If GoldenEye is your gateway drug, is Pierce Brosnan your Bond, or have you changed over the years? Who's your Bond? Who's your Bond actor?
I cannot answer that question. I'll admit, it's really hard to deny that Sean Connery has the whole package, and he's got some really great films to support him, and they're some of the most iconic. When people ask me that question, I usually joke and say, look, I'm like a Mormon. I'm very polygamous when it comes to my Bonds. I just kind of love them all. I think what I really do like about all of them is they all did their own thing. No one copied anyone else. That said, I suppose if you pressed me, I probably would say Sean Connery. But you know, it's funny. Would you mind if I told you a quick story about why I came to really like Timothy Dalton?
I fully support this decision.
Okay.
You're talking to the choir here about Timothy Dalton.
I thought you would. All right. It's kind of a twofold answer. One is that a few years ago, I decided to read all of Fleming's books. I'd never read Fleming's books. And so when I read Fleming's books, they were so good. The only actor I could really picture was Dalton. And I really saw what people said when they said he was the most novelistic of the Bonds. So there was that going in. There is really that fidelity to Fleming. You really can picture Dalton easily when you read Fleming. But the other thing is, a few years ago, I was watching License to Kill on Blu-ray, and I hadn't watched it in many years. And there's that part where he sets Sanchez on fire, and of course, he runs away. There's that giant explosion. And I'm watching this, and I teach art now, but I actually used to teach film. And so I'm watching Dalton run away, and I can tell he's actually right there in that explosion. If you watch the scene, you can clearly see it's his face, and there's a lens flare where the light actually hits the barrel of the lens and bounces around, and it kind of makes that little diamond kind of pattern of the sunbeam. And so I'm looking at it, and I realize, holy crap, he was right there in an explosion. And that made me really appreciate him all the more. I thought, that guy was really in an explosion, and he's still standing. That's amazing. So that's how I really came to appreciate Dalton.
That was great. That was wonderful.
It really was.
It's really amazing to see his face, and you know, you can tell it's not a stuntman, it's really him. So that's just fantastic. He really was ahead of his time. You know, people praise Daniel Craig and Tom Cruise for doing their own stunts, but there was Dalton doing it. You can see him riding on the cars. You can see him in that explosion. It blows my mind. I really appreciate him too.
Yeah, very cool. Is GoldenEye, even though it was your gateway movie, would you still count that as your favorite 007 movie, or given your appreciation of Dalton, is one of those, or is it something else?
Over the years, I've really found that I really love Majesties. Majesties has really stuck with me. I don't know if it's the fidelity to the novel and that very 60s style. It's really an epic movie. It's a film that really goes places many of the other ones don't. So that one's really grown on me. I really love that film.
You have good taste.
Thank you.
Yeah, I knew you were going to warm up to Alan with that one. And I ain't going to debate that either. Majesties is fantastic. It is in my very upper echelon. You mentioned earlier that you got around to dabbling in the books. So do you have a favorite Bond novel?
Absolutely. It is without a doubt, You Only Live Twice. That was the one that I just loved. That one. That one was so mythic. It was so dark, so mythic, so fascinating. It was just so personal too. The reason I say it was so mythic is because you have Bond kind of starts the book out dead after the death of Tracy, and he is frequently resurrected in all these different ways. He's resurrected by M when he gets a new assignment. Bond is killed by Tanaka and resurrected as this Japanese ninja man, a fisherman. And all these things keep happening where he keeps leaving something behind and taking on a new identity. But he has to stay true to himself to avenge Tracy. I just absolutely love You Only Live Twice. And also The Garden of Death, if you've read the novel, is just the most amazing visual set piece. I hope they adapt it really well one day.
It is one of the key missing components from the movie series is they've never done The Garden of Death and Dr. Shadow.
Yeah, I suppose you could say there's a hint of it in the movie with Blofeld's little piranha. And so, I mean, that's a tiny hint. I can't think of anything else really that comes close.
You just mentioned Blofeld. So who's your favorite Bond sort of bad guy, and what is it that makes him sort of the best villain to you?
When it comes to the books, it probably is Blofeld, because there's something I loved about Blofeld in the novel was that when you get to You Only Live Twice, he's so full of himself, he doesn't even recognize Bond. If you read the book, it's Irma Bunt who is freaked out and recognizes Bond, and Blofeld, who's looked the guy right in the eyes, doesn't even recognize him. So I thought, that's pretty funny. This guy is so full of himself that he doesn't even know what's going on around him. But when it comes to the movies, I actually really like Dr. No. I think Dr. No is really underrated. There's something about his just kind of deadpan, cold sensibilities, and I just love the way he delivers lines like, you're just a stupid policeman. You know, I just love Dr. No. I think he's great.
It makes a big difference for him only being on the screen a relatively short amount of time. I think he's only on screen like 20 minutes or so.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no. And I don't know why, but over the years, he's someone who's really grown on me. And of course, he's kind of the prototypical Bond villain too. He's got the big lair. He wears the Nehru suit, you know, so there's a lot of things that the movie Blofeld really took from Dr. No. So yeah, that's where I'm going to go. Dr. No.
I don't think that's a bad answer at all.
Thank you.
Let's talk henchmen or hench people, because there's been a couple of pretty cool hench ladies over the years.
Yeah, there is.
You got a favorite hench person?
I was wondering about this and I'm a little split. So I decided, well, I'll pick one of the kind of classic style and then one of maybe someone's a bit different, if that's okay. So when it comes to the big brute classic style, I love Jaws. I got to go with Jaws. Now, when it comes to someone more outside the box, I think Dario is my favorite.
You damn
it. I mean, he's just so nasty. He's so mean and nasty. And I just love Benicio del Toro anyway. But yeah, I think I'd go with him. And the way he says honeymoon, that is that's terrible. Just awful.
Yeah.
What an evil guy.
On a more pleasant subject, would you say is your favorite Bond girl? And we sort of allow two answers, one for character and one who maybe just gets your blood boiling a bit.
For character, I got to go with Tracy. If she's good enough to marry, then there you go. If Bond picked her, then she's got to be the best. So I go with Tracy. As far as blood boiling, that's a tough one. But I've really always had a thing for Ava Green. Yeah, she really gets my blood boiling. She's got a certain quality I just find fascinating.
You've probably seen Sin City 2 more than once then, I'm guessing.
Yeah. You know, I wished it was as good as the first one. But you know what? She is a standout in that movie. So.
This is a common question that we ask, and I already know one of these answers. The question that we have in our script says, do you enjoy any other Bond media such as comics or games? Pretty sure you enjoy the comic side of things. And we're going to get deep into that in a minute. But do you enjoy anything else like the video games, the board games, any other outside of the typical realm Bond stuff?
Oh, sure. Actually, when I was a kid, I played GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64 all the time. I just loved that game. And I played Everything or Nothing. I thought Everything or Nothing was so much fun. It had a script by Bruce Spearstein. My favorite part, though, I remember of Everything or Nothing was there was a line because they had Judi Dench and they had Pierce Brosnan come by and they had this villain. And Judi Dench tells Bond that the villain is a protege of Max Zorin. And she says, I'm sure you remember him. And Bond says, yes, we played bridge. He lost. So yeah, I've really enjoyed the video games. Haven't played all of them, of course, but I've enjoyed the ones I have played. And yes, obviously, I do love comics.
Well, we're going to dig a bit more into the comics in a minute and get really into the specifics of your Comics Royale project. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break to thank our Patreon sponsors.
Okay, you guys just relax as I read the list of names here of the folks that are keeping us going here at OHMS Pod and all the other White Rocket endeavors. So here we go. We got big shout outs to Brendan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Carl Von Drunker, Phil Amthor, Winston Bodie, Willie Carden, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Johnny Caldwell, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, always like that name, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, there's another good one, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, some cat named Jared Albrecht, William Glenn, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Nikki B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Gwynn, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Donnie Reynolds, Wade Carson, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Camo, Darren Pyle, Chris, Wardam Wade, Jason Albrecht, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Steve Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Spanky, Brant Rumble, J.W. Pepper Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time and anonymous donors, one of which is not anonymous, it was Surfer Chickify. We greatly appreciate to everyone who hits us up on the Patreon page. If you're interested in getting on that list, just go to patreon.com and search for the keyword Plexico, P-L-E-X-I-C-O, and you'll get special shout-outs, behind-the-scenes information on everything we're doing here at White Rocket. Well, let's get back to that interview, and I bet Alan's got some kind of questions.
But before you ask the question, did you notice James Taylor donated to the show? It's pretty amazing.
How sweet it is to be loved by him.
Yeah.
We talked about your sort of origin in the world of Bond, but can you maybe give us the backstory and the origin of what led to Comics Royale and the project overall?
Actually, Alan, I owe it to you. It was your book.
My fault.
Absolutely. I'm really not saying this. This is the truth. It was your book. I got a copy of your book, The History of the Illustrated 007, because I had been reading the Daily Express comics at that point, and I was really enjoying the Daily Express comics, the comic strips, and I wanted to just know more about them. So I got a copy of your book and I read it, and I just found, well, okay, I want to track down all these comics. So I got a bunch of American comics. And, you know, of course, I got the Dark Horse comics and some of Mike Grell's comics and things like that. I haven't read all of them because I like to save things. You know, it's very hard for me, but I kind of put things away and save them for a rainy day so I have something to look forward to. But it was your book that got me excited about finding these foreign comics that were so rare and oftentimes unofficial or illegal that I just started looking into it, and I just started diving on the internet, and I found this Spanish website called Archivo 007. They had a whole bunch of these Spanish comics from South America, from like Argentina and Chile. They were all scanned, and I thought, oh my God, wow, it's like a treasure trove. So I downloaded all of them real quick. That was when I first started looking at foreign comics, and I really just planned to look at the artwork and leave it at that. But I get to one of the comics, and it was an adaptation of Diamonds Are Forever, and it had the movie poster on the cover, and the artwork was drawn like Sean Connery in the movie, and I start thumbing through looking at the artwork, and pretty soon I can tell that it was actually not the movie, it was the novel. And I thought, oh wow, that's pretty cool, they had the movie artwork, but they were adapting the novel. And then halfway through, Plenty O'Toole shows up, who's not in the novel, and then Bambi and Thumper show up, they're also not in the novel. You get to the climax of this comic. Basically, it was the climax of the novel. Yeah, I don't know if Jared's read the novels, but in Diamonds Are Forever, in the novel, the villain is like this gangster. He's like a demented howdy doody. He dresses like a rhinestone cowboy, and he just runs his little trains. This is so silly, but it totally works. They have this death trap where they're on a locomotive engine, and what this comic did was basically did the same thing, but they substituted the locomotive for the moon buggy from the film. And so the villain, instead of having this old west town done up for his own amusement, he had this recreation of Cape Kennedy, and he makes Bond go through a death trap in a moon buggy. And I was like, this is crazy. So I started wondering, why did they do this? If it's unofficial, they must not have had a copy of the movie. So maybe they just saw some lobby cards and some artwork and decided to adapt the novel with some of the visuals for the movie. That's really my best guess. It was such a hybrid of the novel and film that I said, okay, I'm going to translate this one just to get a better handle on the story. And then I'd look at all the other comics and I'd see more stuff like that, where they'd have the movie's visuals, but the novel's set pieces or totally original stuff going on. And so in between classes, in between grading papers, I'd be doing this stuff, translating these comics, and someone saw what I was doing. Luckily, didn't turn me into my boss, but really enjoyed it. So I said, you know, hey, maybe I should share these with people. So I started building the website from there and did a bunch more translations so I'd have enough stuff to put up. And that's how I got started.
Awesome.
That is pretty crazy. Everybody's got a moon buggy death trap, right? Yeah. Obviously.
Those foreign comics are great. I mean, I know you don't have the Swedish ones on your site, but one of my favorite Swedish ones is one where the Millennium Falcon turns up. So
I did see that one. I don't have copies of the Swedish ones yet. So that's something I've got to work on. And if I'm not mistaken, weren't those written in English? Is that correct?
Yeah, some of them were. Yeah. And then translated into Swedish or Norwegian and Danish. Yeah. They also syndicated some of those to some of the other folks like India. And yeah.
Yeah, no, I'd love to get my hands on those, but the whole process takes so long and I want to do it right. So it's something I'm definitely trying to get all this stuff done, but there are a lot of comics. Just the one publisher in Chile, Zigzag,
yeah,
that's like 59 comics. There's a lot of stuff to get through. And a lot of people who contact me, they really want the Zigzag stuff. So I've been working on that.
I will say that's actually my favorite. When I was doing the research for the book and came across the Zigzags and actually managed to track down Germaine Gabler, who wrote and drew most of them, who unfortunately did not want to be interviewed for the book. But
That's too bad.
But yeah, they sort of became my pet project. So to be able to actually see them complete and being translated so I can actually read them is awesome work. So I do appreciate the work doing on that.
That just warms my heart. And because it was you who got me started with this when I got your book. So that makes me very happy. I'm very pleased to hear that. Thank you.
Well, I also once upon a time bought Alan's book before I knew who he was or when before we became best friends. And because I liked Bond and I liked comics. And I said, I'd read this. And I was like, there's so many more comics than I ever knew about. So he's actually literally cost me probably thousands of dollars on eBay. So. Thanks, Alan.
Yeah. So you're the guy I'm fighting on eBay right now.
I probably am. We have probably battled before.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned just briefly in your last answer about process that I go through for the translations. So as vivid and exciting as possible. What's the process like for you?
Basically, what I do is now if I have a comic, I either have it digitally or I have a hard copy. I bought a lot of stuff on eBay, for instance, and just from various people I've met on the internet who have managed to find things for me and send them to me. But the first thing I do when I get a comic is I do read it visually. A lot of the words I do understand, just depending on the language, I can follow it. So if it's in Spanish or Italian or French, I can kind of follow it to a degree a little bit. But I read the story visually to kind of get a handle on the beats of the story. And then what I do is if I have to scan it myself, then I'll scan it. If not, if I have it already digitally, I'll open them up in Photoshop and I just translate one word balloon at a time. I erase the word balloon. I clean it up. I put the text there. And I really just kind of move from word balloon to word balloon. And I don't really overthink it. When I come back, I read the comic a third time just to make sure it flows pretty well. Make sure I'm not using a lot of the same words. I'm not redundant. I try to work on my verb tense, but I'm sure I mess my verb tense up sometimes. But yeah, so that's pretty much what I do. It's a very, very lengthy process. It is a lot of fun. It's very rewarding to share these stories with so many people.
That is fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Do you speak all the languages that you're translating from?
No, I don't actually speak the languages. I mean, I can kind of follow things here and there. I actually taught a class in France for a period. I taught a film class in France a couple of years ago and managed to pick up a lot of the language in my research and just kind of staying there for a few weeks. But no, I don't actually really truly speak the language. So what I do is I use some different translator websites or I consult with friends who do speak the language. I actually have a friend in Mexico and I have a friend from Venezuela. I talk to him sometimes. But what I do is I really only do that when I get really confused. Sometimes a translation is pretty straightforward and I just try to make it sound natural. But other times there might be something very strange or very cryptic and I'll think this must be a slang. Let me ask an expert what this could mean. And so I like to do that just to make sure I'm getting as much a fidelity to the story as possible.
Cool. Put a lot of effort into it. That's very cool.
Well, you know, you have to put thought into it. You know, I mean, why else do it? You know, if the villains put all that thought into their plans, I might as well put all this thought into these comics. So that's the way I look at it.
So is there any sort of particularly strange foreign comic that you've discovered that sort of took you by surprise?
You mean aside from the Millennium Falcon popping up?
Yeah.
So, I need to get that one. I still haven't gotten that one yet, but I've seen the artwork. There was one I got that was called Goldfinger. It was an Argentinian comic, and I haven't really fully translated it yet, but it appears to be a romance comic based on the lyrics of the song. And no, that sounds so weird, but so what I did was I looked up, okay, who did this? And there was this publisher who made a ton of comics where they would take a popular song and make a story up around it. So there are popular American songs or popular songs around the world. So they have one called Goldfinger, and it's this 9-page romance story. So I haven't translated that one yet. I'm working on some of the actual Bond stuff before I get to that one, but I'm curious about that. There's one that really threw me for a loop recently. I met someone from Italy, and she sent me an Italian James Bond erotic comic. And I just assumed, okay, it's going to be, kiss, kiss, bang, bang. It's just going to be James Bond in a porno. I didn't really expect much from it. And the title, you can translate it multiple ways. I'm going to translate it as The Spy Who Screwed Me, because that sounds more 70s. It's a little bit cleaner, and it sounds very 70s. So I'm going to translate it as The Spy Who Screwed Me. But I get this book, and I open it up, and I'm looking through it, and it is a very faithful adaptation of Fleming's The Spy Who Loved Me, which you know he didn't want adapted. Now, of course, they always say that Fleming didn't like it. I happen to feel, well, he must have liked it. He wrote it, but other people didn't like it, so he kind of washed his hands of it. I think that was the deal whenever he sold the rights, was that they could have the title but not adapt the story, if I'm not mistaken. So I know this porno comic is totally illegal. They didn't get the rights to this, but it is really faithful. If you read the novel, it's got the woman Vivienne watching the hotel. She's assaulted by the two creepy thugs. Bond comes in to save her. There's the fire at the hotel. Of course, there's sex scenes. And with a porno, they add more sex scenes. There's even a part where she happens to be cleaning a room and she finds a porno magazine and she just starts fantasizing. And you see the live action version, or I say live action, but you see like the actual porno she's watching for the next few pages. So yeah, that they add some more stuff to it, but it's amazingly faithful to the novel. It's more faithful than a lot of adaptations. And you don't get to say faithful too often when you talk about a porno. So, I think that's one of the strangest I've discovered. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking about something. So you mentioned earlier that sometimes you get translations that are just, you're just like, what? And you got to call in. You said you got friends and experts in different countries. What are some of those most challenging translations you've come across and how do you deal with them? Obviously, you said you have people you can call. And do you have any other resources? And what are some of the examples of those wacky translations?
I really try to be as literal and faithful to the comic as possible. That's what I really strive for because, of course, I really want to give respect to the people who made these comics, even if they were made illegally or unofficially. And I've actually really grown to like German Gabler, who does the Zigzag comics, because you can tell just reading these comics, he really loves Ian Fleming. You could just tell. I really want to be as faithful to them as possible. Now, that said, though, there are times where I'll say, oh, this was cooler in the book, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do what the comic did. For instance, I had a guy who's an author named Mark Edlitz recently contacted me because he's a fan of the site. And he asked me about this Zigzag adaptation of Risiko that I translated. And he asked me, how come you have Bond eating spaghetti? And in the short story, he eats tagliatelle verde. And I had to say, yeah, that was weird because I order spaghetti. And I don't know, I'm not used to Bond eating what I would eat at a restaurant. But in the comic, he had spaghetti con salsa. So I adapted that as spaghetti and marinara sauce. So I thought, I can't change that. I'd get really anal about some of this stuff. And I thought, oh, should I make that tagliatelle? And I didn't do it. So I want to be as faithful to the comic as possible. But sometimes it is really challenging because every once in a while, you'll find a line that does not roll off the tongue. It's really awkward or cryptic. So I will consult people. And other times I'll find something that just doesn't make any sense at all. And I start kind of substituting synonyms to see if I can make it make sense. So I go for the spirit of the piece if I can. For instance, I had one comic, I don't remember which one, but someone asked Bond a question and his response was, my brain isn't that small. And I thought, oh, that's a smart ass thing to say. That doesn't make any sense. And I was agonizing over that for hours. And it finally dawned on me that what he's saying is, I haven't the slightest idea. And so, yeah, so I have to kind of use some imagination. There was sometimes I have kind of stretched it and pushed it a bit because the translation just, or the literal one, just, it didn't make sense to me or it didn't seem correct. And so in the Diamonds Are Forever comic, there's a part where Bambi and Thumper come up to attack Bond and they say something like, hey, the show's not over. And Bond grabs them and flips them on their backs and says, the show's over when the showgirls are injured. And I was like, is that like the fat lady sings? And I'm like, but they're not fat. So I translated the whole comic and I just came back to that one. I was like, what the hell is he saying? And I showed it to people. I couldn't get anything that really made sense. And I thought, well, look, maybe it makes sense over there in Argentina. But here in America, I'm thinking, what would Bond say? Let me stick to the visuals. There's showgirls dancing. Performance. I'm racking my brain and I'm like, okay, they're performers. And it clicked and I said, oh my God, okay, here it goes. So they say, hey, the show's not over. And he says, you know what they say, ladies, break a leg. And that's when he runs away. Because that just made more sense to me. Break a leg. The showgirls are injured. Break a leg. You say to performers, break a leg. So I thought, okay, maybe I stretched it a bit with that one, but it just made the most sense to me. So that's my answer for you.
I think it's fascinating. That's perfectly cool.
I'm probably overthinking all this stuff. You know, I'm stressing myself out for such a silly reason, but hey, it's Bond. It's worth it.
Absolutely.
You sort of talked a bit about that you do this during your sort of breaks and evenings and stuff. Is there sort of any particular sort of place or thing that you work on this? I mean, do you play Bond music in the background? What's sort of your ritual? Are you getting in the zone for doing the Bond translation?
I haven't really had a ritual. I would kind of just do it every once in a while. I did it at work a lot whenever I finished grading or in between projects when I'm like, hey, I'm in my office and I have nothing to grade. Bond, woohoo! And so I do do that. I do it at home. So I'm in the process of changing my life. So I'm thinking now that I'm doing that, I really should get something, some kind of a new workflow, maybe devote some specific time every day to it so I can get these things out there on a more regular basis, because my personal life is kind of really dominated lately and I really want to get back to Bond. So I don't know. I can try out some Bond music. I find that some of the Bond music is so overpowering that it just kind of gets you going, and it's the wrong music for typing at a keyboard a lot of times. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll play, I'll play John Barry's Out of Africa. How about that? So I'll do some of the slower John Barry's. We'll see how that works.
Just for the record, Bond music is the right music for everything. So you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, okay. I really walked into that one. You're right. You're right. Yeah.
Is there any way that the Bond community can help you on this project? Can people who are listening and think, this is super cool, how can I get involved? How can I help? Is there work for them to do? Is there a financial donation site you have to keep up this great work you're doing? How can people get involved?
You mean other than Jared not fighting me on eBay anymore?
Okay. All right. Lesson learned. All right. Lesson learned. eBay is all you now.
I'm kidding. You know, hey, if you have something, then we can compare notes. I'll trade you stuff I have for stuff you have. We could do that. As far as money, you know, maybe I'm naive. Part of me wonders, should I turn money down? But I'm kind of naive, but I feel like, you know, I don't want to profit off someone else's work. And maybe that sounds naive because a lot of these comics were made illegally. Therefore, they were profiting off of others' works. But I really just want to share these with the community because I don't think it would be appropriate for me to make money off of these. Maybe you're rolling your eyes because I'm so naive, but that's where I'm at right now.
It's noble, man. It's noble.
Thank you. Although I don't know, that nobility can go away really fast. I love when people email me and tell me they love the site. Or I met this really nice guy from France recently. He's got a pipeline for these unofficial illegal Bond comics from China, these really tiny little pocketbook comics. And I've been buying those from him. I met another guy from France who asked me about the translation process. He told me something really funny. Either of you ever see the movie Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the one with Michael Caine? And
yes.
There's that hilarious line where Steve Martin's in prison. He's talking about how he was duped to getting into the prison, and it was all about a woman. And he says, it was over a woman. You must understand, you're French. And the cop and the cop says to him, to love a woman, that is French. To be caught, that is American. And so I had a moment with this guy I met from France, and it's not the same conversation, but it reminded me of that very much. And he asked me about the translation process, and I told him, and he said to me, ah, yes, translations are like a woman. The more faithful, the less beautiful they are, which I thought was hilarious. Because a lot of people would see it the opposite way. But no, you know, I love when people contact me. If other people have access to comics I don't have, if they'd want to sell them to me or scan them and share them with me, I would absolutely love that. We could trade notes and talk Bond. So I just love meeting more people in the community. I've loved Bond so much. And so it's just a thrill for me to be able to do these things. And I'm finding Bond comics all the time. I'm sure Alan was like that too when you're writing your book. You write your book, you think you'd be finished, and then you find something else that you didn't know existed. So I've been finding stuff all over the place. I just bought a comic on eBay today, a Japanese manga, and it says 006 on it. I'm like, who the hell? This is about 006, but it looks like James Bond. So I thought, what the hell? I'm going to buy that. I've never seen it before. So I'm finding new stuff all the time. I even found one comic. It's an Italian comic called Goldrake. And Goldrake is, from what I can tell, an Italian secret agent. He looks just like the French actor Jean-Paul Belmondo from Jean-Luc Godard's Breathless. If you ever seen Breathless, and I see this comic, it's got a topless woman with a bow and arrow. And I thought, is this For Your Eyes Only? I said, what the hell? I got this, and it's a ripoff of For Your Eyes Only with different characters. So there's new stuff you find all the time because Bond is so big. Everyone loves Bond all over the world. So if the fans have access to stuff or knowledge, please contact me. That's all I really want. I just want to make the community bigger.
And that best way to contact you is through the website?
Yes, you can contact me on the website. I guess if you want to, you can find me on Facebook too. But yeah, so I don't mind being Facebook friends with people all over the world. I think it's fun. But yeah, you can contact me on the website if you go to comicsroyale.com, and there's a way for you to contact me, and we can just go from there.
Well, you're right. I mean, always happens when you write a book anyway, start finding new stuff. But yeah, when the book came out, yes, I've been seeing and finding new comics and even looking at your website and seeing some of the stuff that you've got in your galleries. It's like, oh, that's a new one for me. But that's cool.
I feel like I barely scratch the surface too. Yeah. I kind of kick myself and I start saying, you know, I should have done more translations for maybe 5 years and then unveiled the website because there's so many more to do. But I'm glad it's out there. I'm glad people love it. Just more incentive for me to keep going.
Yeah. And I will second your recommendation of the Chinese bootleg comics. They are so much fun. Those are really good. The hardest thing is actually trying to figure out which story it actually is that you're looking at when you first open it up.
Yeah.
Those are very cool. So is there anything else about the project that you'd like to sort of mention before we wrap? I think you just mentioned the URL or where they can actually find the project.
Yes.
But anything else you'd like to sort of promote about Comics Royale before we wrap?
Just to reiterate, it really is a true labor of love for me. I really enjoy doing it. I love finding all these stories. I just love Bond. We have the movies. We have the books. We get new books all the time. Well, not all the time, but every once in a while we get a new book. But I think it's great because there's so much more out there that we haven't seen. And that's what I really enjoy about the site. It's a labor of love. And I really want to thank you both for having me here. And also, Alan, thank you so much because your book really got me started on this journey.
You're more than welcome. It's great to see it come to fruition in this way as an ongoing exercise as well. It's great.
Yeah, if I ever meet you in person, you're going to have to sign the book for me. That's my goal.
Well, don't give it away to your brother.
That sounds oddly specific, Alan.
Yeah, I don't know why I thought that. Yeah.
Okay, so I ordered his book. This was before I ever met him. I found his book on Amazon. I ordered it. I liked it. I read it. I sent it to my brother. Next thing you know, I'm at a convention sitting directly across from Alan looking at that same book going, man, that was a great book. Why did I send that to my brother? So I start giving him my doe eyes and like, I should really get an autographed book. And he took care of me. He's a good dude. That's why we're best friends.
Well, good.
So people out there, this is a worthwhile project. Check out comicsroyale.com. That's correct, right? Comicsroyale.com.
Yes.
Good deal. Check that out. If you're listening and you're in another country, you've got access to these things, hook the man up. If you've got translation skills and you're like, hey, I think I can help you with some of that weirder stuff from Czechoslovakia, let him know. He will take the help. I'm calling all Bond community fans, especially international folks, to help him out. And with that, I would like to thank both Alan and Clinton for being here today. And I want to thank the listeners who tuned in. But before we go, let's find out where folks can find us on social media. Of course, I am at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Alan, where can they find you?
Well, first off, I'm going to plug the book that we all mentioned because you just gave me a perfect in for doing that. The book that got mentioned several times is James Bond, The History of the Illustrated 007, a look at Bond comics around the world, unsurprisingly, given today's conversation. And you can still find it on Amazon or conventions. You can find copies, which I'm happy to sign. And you can find conventions and stuff about my writing at alanjporter.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at alanjporter. Or for Bond-specific stuff, you can follow me on Twitter at BondLexicon.
And our special guest, Clinton, if you would like people to find you on social media, where can they go?
Well, you can go to the website, comicsroyale.com. I've got a Comics Royale Facebook page, which I update to let people know what's coming on the site. And if you want to find me on Facebook and be my international friend and we can talk Bond on Facebook Messenger, go right ahead. We'll make the world a smaller place through Bond.
Thank you so much, Mr. Clinton Rawls, for being here. Again, a worthwhile pursuit. We're glad you're out there doing it.
Thank you.
And that's going to be a wrap on today's episode. Thanks again for being here, everybody. And help out with those Bond translations if you can. I'm going to say it one more time, comicsroyale.com. And oh, by the way, The History of the Illustrated 007 is a book available on Amazon, and it's awesome.
Thank you. It was a wonderful hour.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure.